On April 19th, the Roku channel released a new original series based on the children's fantasy books, The Spiderwick Chronicles. The new show is completely disconnected from the 2008 movie, which starred Freddie Highmore, and reboots the franchise in similar fashion to what Disney did with Percy Jackson and the Olympians, Netflix did with Avatar The Last Airbender, Netflix did with A Series of Unfortunate Events, and HBO did with His Dark Materials. On this podcast, we like to discuss a recent installment of a different series every show. Welcome to Spiderwick is the 47-minute pilot we're here to discuss. Welcome to today's episode.
Did you ever read any of the books as a kid?
No, I've heard of them, though.
Holly Black and Tony DiTerlizzi, they were the people that worked on this. They also wrote the books.
And how do you pronounce his name?
Tony DiTerlizzi.
DiTerlizzi, okay.
And they wrote three in 2003 and then the last two in 2004. But back in 2018, 2019, and even through the pandemic, they really were trying to get this TV show made.
And so it was the creators of the books, just like in Percy Jackson, who brought this out.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And I wanted to know, because really when you add up all the books, it's 679 pages as a whole. And much like the movie, which kind of compressed all five books, I know that season one is doing the same thing, but one thing I heard is that they try to go more in depth.
Absolutely.
In this.
Yes. So I watched the movie in preparation for the first time of this, and a lot of my notes are covering the differences between the two.
Great.
And the similarities.
Yep.
The overview is kind of the same for each one, though. You have the Grace family, who are descendants of Arthur Spiderwick, hence the Spiderwick Chronicles, and they move to Henson, Michigan to restart their lives, only to discover the town is a hotbed of magic, monsters, and mystery.
This sounds just a lot like Narnia. I know that you said when you were watching the
movie.
Well,
they do have a tree. So Narnia, I think it started with like the boy and the apple and the something. It's kind of similar to that, where there's a tree growing in the middle of the house. It's not HOA approved, but when the realtor comes over and tries to buy the house from under them, he doesn't even mention it, which is kind of strange.
I know that you also compared the movie to Lock and Key, and they got the person who created this not only created Daybreak, the Netflix TV show, but they produced and wrote for Lock and Key.
I mean, Lock and Key, the family moves to a new home because their ancestors are from there. They have these keys that unlock a lot of magic. Demons disguise themselves as humans, and they try to steal the keys, and the parents are kind of unaware and don't believe the kids. All of that crosses over, except for the fact that instead of keys, it's just fairies and this booklet that they're the chronicle or the field guide that they're looking for.
Starting off right away, which one was better, the film or the TV series?
The TV series is way better than the movie was.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you like the TV series.
No, I'm still going to give the series like a middling 5 out of 10, but
okay.
I just really was not a fan of watching a kids movie, 2008, like CGI-ish. The plot was very simple.
It was around the time that a lot of films were just kind of being passed on, but trying to copy the Harry Potter route.
I think I just hate Freddie Highmore. I'm kidding. I've been fine with him in Bates Motel. And what is it? The Good Doctor?
The Good Doctor, yeah.
Yeah. He's grown up into his roles. And he was also even good in Wonka, I think. No, not
that.
The,
that was Timothy.
The old Wonka, right?
Willy Wonka. Okay. Yeah.
So let's keep this out in the open. Watching the 2008 movie now, it's clear that it was targeted towards a very young audience. All the villains were incredibly stupid, inept, animated to be goofy. Keep in mind the main one, Mulgrath, right?
Yep.
He disguises himself as like Nick Nolte first, and then for the rest of the movie he is in his troll form and he's just bursting around the house until he gets eaten up, right?
Yep.
That's not too much of a spoiler, but in the series he's like much more inquisitive. He is Christian Slater,
right?
So
I would think that he would be more in the series than he was in the film.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he has a sidekick who is also very like sneaky and very Lock and Key-ish.
What is the sidekick's name?
I do not know, but she's a blonde like 15-year-old.
Could
and
it
she's
possibly
supposed to
be Calliope?
Yes, it is Calliope.
Yeah, she was not actually in any of the source material that as a character that they just decided to add to the TV.
There's a couple new characters and I'll get to them in a minute, but yeah, so we have this extremely basic plot from the movie and it feels like they abbreviated a lot of the lore and the personalities and the plot from all of the books to fit it into, to squeeze it into those 95 precious minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so why is it even called the Spiderwick Chronicles when they released it back then? If the first book was called The Field Guide and Game of Thrones, the series is like the Song of Ice
Song
and Fire.
Song of Ice and Fire, yeah.
They could have just gone with like the Field Guide and it probably would have been more descriptive to it. as you were saying, because they weren't planning on doing sequels because they had pushed all that source material in there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know, because there isn't actually that much talk about the film. It just kind of came out, was a moderate box office success, and I think that not many people remembered it. Yeah.
Had the lady from Weeds in it. Yeah, suffice to say, the significant changes from the movie are these. First of all, they aged up the actors.
Yes,
Highmore played like a 12-ish twin, and these kids are like late high school.
That's closer to what, the film was closer to what it was in the book, but it was a conscious decision by the authors to make them kind of teenagers.
Probably
here.
So that they could flesh them out a little bit more. Kind of like in Game of Thrones, again, they did age them up as
Originally, they wanted to make it, they wanted to actually copy what Freddie Highmore did in the film. They wanted to make the teenagers be the same actor, but then they saw how good the chemistry was between the two of them, and they were like, you know what, let's just keep them
as they are. They just don't come across as twins in the TV show. If there's a criticism there, it's just that they seem like younger brother, older brother, and the older brother is a bit crazier.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because really the age difference between the two of them is only 2 months older. Lion Daniels as Jerry Grace, he's been in three things before: a music video, We Can Be Heroes, the Shark Boy and Lava Girl 2 sequel, but also Patriot. And you might not recognize him from Patriot, but that's actually him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was the little kid in the pilot. So that's where I think you would know him.
I hardly remember the pilot, but I do remember that that kid had to end up working with the brother mm-hmm. of the main character.
Yeah.
And yeah, so he was being like adopted by him or something. So yeah, they fleshed out these characters. Helen the mom, Mallory the sister, Simon, the main character's nerdy brother twin, villain Mulgarath, Dr. Brower, because he's taken the place of Dr. Brower. Lemon Drop and Jeffrey, the mice, also get more screen time. And then you get new characters that you were talking about. Calliope, who I think is a good addition, because she kind of balances out Mulgarath, and she's actually crazier than him, but he like keeps her, he's in for the long game. He wants to eat the entire town while she just wants blood.
Can we go back to Mulgarath for a second? You sure. Said that he takes over Dr. Who's?
Dr. Brower. So Dr. Brower is the first person we see in the series, and he's running across a bridge trying to find his daughter, who Mulgarath has already stolen.
This sounds exactly like Goosebumps, where the main villain takes over someone else's identity.
Just like Mockingkey, just like Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. They do this a lot in kids' TV shows. But yeah, so he's running across a bridge, and then the villain, he's made a deal with Mulgarath, and he says, I brought the Graces here. Like, Arthur Spiderwick's kids or grandkids are coming here. That's what you asked. Now give me my daughter back. And so he does. And that's who Calliope is. Calliope goes running across the bridge, and then that's where Dr. Brower really looks at her, and she's like, wait, your scar's on the wrong side, and answer this question for me.
So he weeds
it out, and it was kind of a cool scene, and it was intimidating. And that's where I was like, ooh, this series could be really like something much better than the movie. And then he dies because this giant troll hand comes up from under the bridge, like in Cabin in the Woods, and
just grabs about to say.
And pulls him down to nowhere. And then she like turns around, and that's when the new Dr. Brower, Mulgarath identity occurs, and he comes out, and he's like, we've got work to do in this town.
It's a little bit also like Locke from Lost, where I mean, kind of spoilers, but the black monster
Absolutely.
Takes over his form, and then he starts to say things even from what it sounds like you were saying, where it's like, we have work to do or something like that.
That's 100% correct. But if I don't keep moving on the changes that they made, we're going to get lost.
Okay.
The family is closer than they were in the movie, because you watch the movie too, and you have to admit, like, their family dynamic was rough.
I watched the movie back in 2008, and I did not remember it being as tenuous as
they
it was.
They were all jerks to each other, and this family is much closer. The sister and mom specifically are way less mean to the kid. However, there is a condition to that. I'll get it to in a second. There's also no poisonous apple tree growing out of the kitchen in the main room in the movie. Well, in the series, I think they returned that. They brought it back.
Mm-hmm.
Jared is an artist now. Like, he does have some abilities. It's not just that his brother is this nerdy kid.
Is Jared more the main character?
Oh,
than...
absolutely. Like, okay. he still is, just like in the movie. 2024, they bring a little bit of 2024 flair, because when they're moving in, Mallory, the sister, has these giant posters that she brings. She's still a swordsman or a fencer, and so she uses them to fence with, but one of them is a giant poster of Nick Jonas, and that was the only one I recognized at first, and then I had to look up Bad Bunny, because I was like, oh, that's who that is. But then the third one, I never even realized who it was. Like, I still don't know who it was. But...
I know that with the pop culture references, they kind of, like you said, they they made them more recent.
Yeah, but then they also took us back to the past, because in 2004, you had like the what were the biggest things? Scooters. And that's what Jared and Simon are roaming around in the house for like, for, so they wanted to keep both years in there. They mm-hmm. wanted to have it for the kids and the adults. And then when Jared does find the field guide, unlike in the movie, it's missing its pages already.
Okay, so it's not ripped out.
Like, it is ripped out.
Well, it's ripped out, but in the movie, you see them be ripped out. You see the book.
Later on. Yeah. But like, he finds a complete field guide at first. In this version, it's already ripped out.
So what's the big, because I don't actually remember from the movie, what's the big deal about the book being ripped out? They need the full thing?
Well, it's like Mulgrath's whole deal is he needs that book. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why he wants the Graces there, is so that he can manipulate them into giving him the book, and so he can break the curse and blah, 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 blah. But like, with this, we do know that Thimbletack, or whatever his name is hiding stuff, and we don't know if he has the book pages. I'm sure you'll hear that in future episodes.
Do you know who voiced Thimbletack really fast?
No.
You would know him if you looked at him. He's one of the kids from It, but he's also from Shazam. He's the kid who has the strap-on crutches.
Oh, yes, of course. He's going to be in a new movie, too. I just can't place it at this second. The biggest change that is kind of significant is that the mom, remember how she recently split with the dad?
Yes.
And the entire movie, Freddie Highmore's character, Jared, is just blaming the mom,
He wants to live with the dad.
Yeah, everybody's rolling their eyes at the mom because they feel like it's her fault. In the show, he blames himself, and so does everybody else.
That actually seems like a smart decision because it gives you more empathy for that character.
But literally, they blame him. The mom goes...
Oh, the mom also blames?
The mom absolutely blames him. She says that part of the reason she got... Okay, so this is what she says to the aunt, who they know they're related to this lady, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if in the movie they remembered that. They did visit her at one point, but like aunt... something or other. They go visit her in the old folks home, but this time it's just the mom who does so. But Jared overhears her say, "Jared is impossible. I do what I can to help him. Therapy, research, divorce." Terrible mothering skills.
This mom seems a lot less likable. At least in the film, she was like, you felt bad.
Except for that, though, she's pretty cool.
Wait, what?
Yeah, no, I'm saying like she's on the level. She's pretty cool with her kids. It just feels like everyone's fed up. The first scene we see with Jared, admittedly, he is stealing gum from a gas station. The attendant catches them. But it catches him, but then he's able to kind of weasel out of it, and everybody comes to his defense. And it's only at the last second where he's trying to tell them about the magic and the fairies, where the gum drops out of his pocket, and suddenly it's like the boy who cried wolf, mm-hmm. where they're not going to believe right. that thing he says. Yeah, similar to the movie there, we do have a few similarities to the movie. First of all, Jared has burnt a lot of trust and goodwill, which we just went into. And so no one believes him about Thimbletack, and no one believes him about the fairy he captures. And I really like the part of the episode where he captures this fairy, because the town is having this like something for the lights, the firelights, which because
it's like a festival.
Yes, festival for the firelights. And there's all these like fireflies around, and people just go around and catch them because back in the day, people believed in fairies. But he actually catches one, and it's a fairy, and it makes a little face towards him, and I'm like, oh, they're gonna have a little chat, and then he breaks the jar accidentally, and the fairy flies off. It doesn't.
How is the CGI in this?
I mean, the thing I like about Christian Slater being the villain is that they don't have to depend on the Mulgrath roast troll thing all the time.
Right.
So, like, they show you cool clips of, like, from a shadow angle of it eating a cat. That orange tabby from the movie is in this, but he eats it and kills it. But, like, they do it from the side angle from a shadow shot, and that was really effective, too.
It seems like that's always what happens to the pets, though. Even in, like, actual horror movies, they're the first to go because they always get eaten or torn in half or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mallory, I already said that she fences still. In the movie, she's just kind of like waving around a little sword there. But in this, she's got plans for...
You can actually see her skill.
Not only that, but she's got plans for... I forgot what school it was. Dartmouth? No, that doesn't sound right. They moved to Michigan, right?
Yeah.
And for some reason, Michigan, this one place in Henson, has like an amazing fencing team, world-renowned fencing team. And the teacher is like Yoda. She's blind and she knows how to fence. And the first lesson with Mallory, she walks in there and she's like, you... Tell me how we're going to have a mental sword fight. And so they start like parrying each other back and forth with the moves. Mallory wins. And the teacher says, I can't teach you. Get out of here. I need broken people or stuff like that.
Wait, so let me get this straight. Yes. Mallory is so good.
Yes. She's like, again, she's very plain. She wants to go to the Olympics and then she wants to teach. And then like, she's got it all figured out. And the teacher says, that's no good. I'm not going to teach someone like that. Goodbye.
Usually the person doesn't already have the skill. You see them work up to that throughout the series or the film.
It was a bit ridiculous. It was indeed. So my pros, right?
Yes.
The show has some teeth. The first scene I told you, they murder Dr. Brower. Mulgrath takes his body. Cabin in the Woods hand comes out. The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, Goosebumps, Lock and Key, all that jazz. Like, that's what I was getting the vibes of, and I was all there for it. The humor there. The neighbor, when he stops by and talks to the mom, because he's there with a casserole, and you're thinking, okay, this guy's just a nice guy, kind of like Haunting in Hill House,
yeah,
where the new family's coming in town. However, he just immediately, as soon as she says, oh, I'm not selling the place to you, he starts pointing out every little thing that he possibly can, being like, okay, well, that's not to code, and really starting to needle her. And I found that extremely funny because HOAs suck. And then there's the fact that the mom was partially raised by Lucinda. That's the name of the aunt.
Oh, okay.
So the aunt is, she knows everything. And she's partially in the facility that she's at because everybody thinks she's mad and crazy. But I do think that having the connection of the mom actually knowing her is a lot more effective than what we saw where Nancy from Weeds didn't have an idea who this
she
was.
She didn't show up. Also, Lucinda didn't show up until like the last, 20, 30 minutes of the film?
Yes. Yes. Catching the Firefly at the Firefly Festival. We did talk about that. Less dumb CGI goblins. We don't get any of those quite yet. I'm sure they're coming. I'm sure Seth Rogen version. Now, if he returned, I wouldn't be that all against it. The Ron Perlman one, not a fan of, but the Seth Rogen one, I did like.
Well, Seth Rogen was playing like the hero. He was playing the likable character.
I know, but it's just weird to see him play a troll. And it's got good pacing. I did feel by the end of the episode, we were left off at a good spot where they had moved in and Jared was 100%. He knows that Thimbletack or whatever exists and that there's weird secret magic going on and the rest of the family is still against him. So I think we're in a good setup spot.
So you gave it a 5. Then.
But then I have a con.
Yeah, what are the cons?
The cons are that like Henson, Michigan is this small town, right? And it's convenient that they had this giant fencing arena, right? Mm-hmm. So that part I really didn't like. Like the Aunt Lucinda, if she's 80 years old, I'll eat my notes like right now because they stuck a wig on like a 40, 50 year old, maybe even younger, I think. And then they were like, you're old now, like you're going to play old.
So she didn't
her
actually
face
look
doesn't
like it.
Look 80. No, I mean, like if you look at the movie, that looks like an old woman. Aunt Lucinda. No.
Usually you have a problem with people playing younger, not older. So this is kind of the first time I'm hearing you say that.
It was just so obvious. So there's those missing mice. And I did like the mice as Jeffrey and whatever his face is. And they go missing rather soon and they blame Jared for that. Everybody thinks, oh, what'd you do with the mice? And then they find a bunch of desiccated mice in the walls, which was actually Thimbletack or whatever. But when they go into town, that's when Simon suddenly has conjured within the first day a ton of flyers for finding his mice with their picture on it. And even if they had gotten in, installed a computer in this old rickety Victorian house and then printed out all these things like in an hour, him going into town for lost mice, how far does he think those things would have traveled? Like they are out in the middle of nowhere. Like how is anybody going to find those mice and where would they be? Like it's so strange that he'd be putting them up like there was a lost dog or a lost cat. Didn't like that. The mom's bipolarism. You remember the scene in the movie where Jared, he starts off, he hears things in the walls, he takes the broom, he starts pounding the wall and breaking it,
right,
breaking the drywall, and the mom gets mad and then blames him and stuff like that. That's different in this. The mom's actually the one who takes the hilt of the broom and starts smacking the wall. She's like, this got to come down sometime.
Okay, so she's the one.
So she's like, she's looking like the fun mom. It's like demolition time, everybody. And so all the kids are getting together. They're not really checking if it's a load-bearing wall, which they probably should have.
Yeah.
However, they bust down the wall. That's where they find the crate that moves downstairs. What is it called? Something lift, a deadlift or whatever. And that's where the desiccated mice are. As soon as they see those desiccated mice, though, it's like fun time's over. The mom's like, oh, this is disgusting. I'm out. But she starts getting mad at the kids then. And it's like, why are you getting mad at the kids?
It seems like the mom was doing something crazier than the kid.
Well, no. It's not the fact that she was doing anything crazier. It's just like, well, you just busted down the wall yourself. And now you're asking them to clean it up. It's kind of unfair. And then the sister bails, of course. And then, of course, this line that I told you about her blaming her son for the divorce. So far, I guess the biggest criticism I have is we really don't see, we see Jared acting out, but we don't see him being a bad dude. They send him to therapy. They've taken him to Michigan for therapy. Huh. And one way you could say is that Dr. Brower was just so convincing that they needed to and that he has a big problem. But they have not proven, I don't think, justifiably, that Jared is such a troublemaker that he deserves to be treated the way that he is.
Because even in the film, you do understand why Jared, like, Jared is a troublemaker.
But they're not forcing him into therapy and they're not blaming him for the divorce. They're saying the dad bailed because Jared, and he still talks to him. He still talks to the dad via text. But they're saying that the dad, Richard, like, took off because he couldn't handle Jared, and the guy stole some gum. Like, what's the big deal? It's like military school time. I don't know. It just seems like this intense therapy where he's going. We do see one scene, and that's where we meet the other new characters, Emiko and Hatcher. And Hatcher, I believe, has body dysmorphia, and Emiko is a pathological liar because when he comes in, she does tell a funny joke about how she has millions of dollars because she's hacked into the CIA, but then she forgot the password that she kept it in. And then I think later on, he catches her making out with another girl, but it might have been someone else. I think that part's going to play out in its own separate way. Lock and Key isn't the best of shows, but it does have so many of these same elements and themes that I think it overall is just better, that I can't recommend this one and say just if someone hasn't seen Lock and Key, they'd much more enjoy that, I think.
Well, you're in good company because the show has a 5 out of 10 on IMDb. It has a 38% on Rotten Tomatoes. The audience score is a little bit higher. It actually has a 76%. But yeah, critical scores and guest critics across the board have just given it negative reviews.
A 5 out of 10 on IMDb is different than a 5 out of 10 when I usually give it, because 5 out of 10 is usually just meaning basic show. Well, 5 out of 10 on IMDb usually means trash show. And it's not a trash show.
Well, I think that, like, just Variety said, despite aging the characters up for this adaptation, the setting and special effects aren't creepy or dazzling enough to keep a teen audience engaged. IGN gave it a 6 out of 10, which is a mediocre score, but they also kind of criticized the pop culture references. And I think people just find the show to be boring, but it had a kind of a weird history because, like I said, the authors, they worked on this 2018, 2019 through the pandemic, and then they kind of really got in touch with the creator, Aaron Eli Coletti, who has done a lot of things. He even co-produced the first season of Heroes. He wrote for Star Trek Discovery. And so then they ended up going to Disney Plus, and Disney Plus announced in November of 2021, they were like, we are going to be making this series, The Spiderwick Chronicles. And then they ended up shooting it. They went through pre-production and shot it mid-September 2022. And then they ended filming late January 2023. And then they ended up making it, and it was ready to go. And then August of 2023, it turns out that Disney was like, you know what? We're actually not going to release it. Well, they said that it was cost-cutting concerns. But also, I thought that was just kind of what Warner Brothers was doing. They were pointing at Warner Brothers with the Batgirl films by being like, oh, this is actually just a terrible show. But then I read that there was an impairment charge that Disney was going to have to pay of $1.5 to $1.8 billion. And I was like, oh, okay, that actually makes sense.
But Roku didn't have to?
So Roku actually went through their own kind of impairment charge, and they did end up buying the rights, and but again, the series was already made by that point, so they just ended up releasing
it. Roku barely makes any sense.
Yeah, well, and the thing is also is that they were hoping for a season two, even though they did kind of use all 5 books in this thing, and if they are to make a season two, it's not going to look as good because it's not going to have Disney's budget to it. It's going to be a Roku TV series, so right now it's kind of up in the air. Also, Christian Slater's contract was only for one season.
Ooh.
So at this point, no one really knows what's
Slater,
going to happen.
No deal, I don't think. Yeah. I would say my ultimate take is it's better than the movie. Slater isn't phoning it in. I think that's important to state. It's better than Madam Web because this is technically part of the Spider-Verse, if you didn't know. Spider-Wick, Spider-Verse. But when all the options like Lock and Key exist, I don't see it necessary to just have another haunted house movie, troubled kid storyline. Mm-hmm. Other ones that I wanted to even see your opinion on was like Mysterious Benedict Society, which I knew was also Disney, also appealed to kids. Anything like that?
I wouldn't say so because the Mysterious Benedict Society, from what I remember, and it was a while ago, didn't have any really horror themes to it.
Yeah. Also, if you think about Disguises, like that's all A Series of Unfortunate Events is about, like the bad guy disguising himself as a bunch of, now he does a terrible job of it, but he
Count
seems,
Olaf.
He's very effective with a lot of people, which is the funny part of that show. Overall, though, I think we've discussed it enough, right?
Yep.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next one. Bye.
Bye.